A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been down in his workshop with a Dremel again, engraving his possessions, and he sent us a whole meditation on it. His inventory system has survived multiple moves in Jerusalem, which means it survived extreme UV, heat, dust, and the particular chaos of unboxing your entire life into a new apartment. He started with stickers. The Brother TZ231 industrial label is, in his view, the best adhesive on the market, and he still found its limits. Awkward curvatures, weird materials, tiny objects, things that live outdoors. A sticker can't go everywhere. A QR code needs contrast and a clean flat surface. An NFC tag needs electronics and proximity, so he landed on engraving, and he wants to know how durable it actually is. At various depths, on various materials, because even engraving has natural limits. And he suspects correctly that the military and aerospace sectors have codified standards for this. He also wants to know how engravers throughout history turned to it as durable identity marking, and sometimes literature. So today we're asking, what does it actually take to make a mark that outlasts everything else? And how deep does the rabbit hole of permanence really go?
The thing that struck me about Daniel's prompt is the word he used, permanence. He's not looking for a label that lasts a few years. He's looking for a mark that will be there when he's dead. And that's not a new desire. That's the oldest desire in the inventory business.
The oldest desire in the inventory business being what? The first shepherd who wanted to know which goat was his?
The first person who put a notch in a stick and realized the notch would still be there next season. But before we get to the history, the physics is the part that explains everything else. Why does engraving win? Because a carved mark is a physical deformation of the substrate itself. You're removing material. You're changing the shape of the object. A sticker is additive. Ink is additive. Paint is additive. They sit on top of the surface, and anything that sits on top can delaminate, peel, fade, or fail at the adhesive layer. Engraving has nothing to peel. There's no coating to fail. The mark is the absence of material. It's a hole in the shape of your identifier.
So it's not that engraving is stronger than a sticker. It's that there's nothing there to be weak.
The failure mode of a sticker is the adhesive. The failure pattern of ink is the pigment breaking down under UV. The failure pattern of engraving is the object itself eroding away. And that's a much slower process. That's the whole trick. You've traded a fast failure pattern for a slow one.
And depth is the variable that controls how slow.
Depth is the variable, and it's not linear. A shallow engraving, something like a tenth to 3/10 of a millimeter, that's what you get from a quick pass with a Dremel or a laser. It survives handling. It survives mild weather. But it's vulnerable to abrasion. If the surface gets scratched or scuffed, the scratch can eat into the groove and destroy the legibility. Corrosion, too. A shallow mark on steel will rust over and become illegible. A deep engraving, half a millimeter or more, the identifier is physically below the wear surface. The surface can erode significantly, and the mark is still there because the mark is a canyon, not a scratch.
This is why petroglyphs survive. People carve them deep.
People carve them several millimeters into the rock, and then the rock around them eroded, and the grooves are still there because they're below the original surface. The surrounding stone weathers away, but the groove is deeper than the weathering. It takes a very long time for erosion to erase a groove that's cut 5 millimeters into granite.
So the rule is, carve deeper than the weather.
Carve deeper than the weather, yes. But material matters as much as depth. Hard materials hold crisp edges for millennia, but they're hard to engrave. Granite, hardened steel, glass. Soft materials are easy to mark, but the mark degrades faster because the material itself wears. Aluminum, brass, most plastics. The industrial sweet spot is anodized aluminum. The anodized coating provides contrast, the underlying metal provides structural integrity, and the engraving cuts through the coating into the metal. You get a mark that's both visible and durable.
And NASA has actually codified all of this. The PRC 903D spec.
PRC 903D. This is the document that tells you exactly how deep to engrave a part number on a spacecraft component. And the rationale is bracing. A part number on a spacecraft has to survive the full mission lifecycle. That includes launch vibration, vacuum, temperature cycling, re-entry heat, handling by technicians in gloves, and in some cases sandblasting or chemical cleaning. If the part is scorched, the identifier still has to be legible. So the spec gives minimum depths for different materials. Metals get one set of requirements, composites get another, and the mark has to remain legible after environmental testing. They literally engrave the part, abuse it, and then check if they can still read the number.
That's the standard Daniel is accidentally recreating in his apartment. He's engraving things, then life happens to them, and he checks if he can still read the number.
He's running a one-man accelerated stress test, and his conclusion is the same one NASA reached. Engraving is the most durable option, but even NASA knows engraving fails eventually. The spec doesn't promise permanence. It promises survival for the mission lifecycle. That's the honest framing. Nothing is permanent. Everything has a timescale.
And the timescale for engraving is geological. The Blombos Cave pieces.
Blombos Cave in South Africa. Pieces of ochre with geometric engravings. 75,000 years old. Among the earliest known human engravings. And they survived because they were in a protected cave. That's the crucial detail. Outdoor petroglyphs erode at rates of millimeters per millennium, which sounds slow, and it's slow on a human timescale. But a groove that's 3 millimeters deep will be gone in a few thousand years if it's exposed to wind and rain. The Blombos pieces survived because nothing touched them. No weather, no light, no lichens. The cave was a time capsule.
So the oldest engravings survived by being indoors, which is a very Daniel conclusion. Store your inventory in a cave, and it'll last forever.
It's the original archival storage strategy. Protect the mark from the environment, and it outlasts the civilization that made it. Which brings us to the people who absolutely can't afford a mark to fail. The military and aerospace sectors. A part number that fades on a fighter jet component isn't an inconvenience. It's a safety hazard. If you can't identify a part, you can't verify its maintenance history, you can't confirm it's the right part for the airframe, and you can't trace a failure back to its source, the U.S. Military has conducted systematic testing on marking durability, and this is where Daniel's orange paint detail comes in. They tested oil paint pigments for weatherproofing. Orange won. That's not a trivial finding. That's the result of putting paint samples outdoors for years and measuring which ones survived. Orange pigment, specifically certain formulations, is the most resistant to UV degradation.
Which is why you see orange markings on so much military equipment. It's not aesthetic. It's the pigment that survives.
And that gets at the deeper point. Engraving alone is often invisible. On dark metal, on anodized aluminum, a bare groove can be hard to read. You need contrast. The historical solution is to fill the groove with pigment. You carve the letters, then you rub paint into the grooves, and the paint makes the mark legible. That's a hybrid system. The engraving provides the structure, the pigment provides the legibility. And now you have two failure patterns. The pigment can fade even if the engraving survives. This is exactly what happened to ancient inscriptions. The carved letters are still there, but the paint that made them readable is long gone. We see bare stone, and we think that's what the ancients saw. They saw painted letters.
So the Parthenon wasn't white marble with bare carvings. It was painted.
It was garish. Bright blues and reds and gold, and all of that pigment is gone. The carving survived, the color didn't. The structure outlasted the surface. That's the lesson. Engraving gives you the structure. You have to solve the contrast problem separately, and the contrast will always fail first.
Which is why the military tests paint pigments. They know the engraving is fine. They're worried about the paint in the groove.
And the standards ecosystem goes even further. Beyond PRC 903D, there are mil specs that specify not just depth, but font size and placement. Because a mark that's illegible is as useless as one that's gone. If the font is too small, if the placement is wrong, if the mark is on a surface that gets covered by another component, the engraving is wasted. Marking is a system. Substrate preparation, engraving method, post-engraving treatment. All of it matters. The groove is just one step.
And this is what Daniel is discovering with his Dremel. The engraving is the easy part. The setup, the template, the contrast, the placement. That's where the skill lives.
And the history shows the same thing. Engraving as identity marking goes back to the beginning. Cuneiform tablets from ancient Mesopotamia. These were administrative records, inventory systems, literally. The earliest writing we have is mostly accounting. How many sheep, how much grain, who owes what to whom. The first literature was an inventory list, and they wrote it by pressing a reed stylus into wet clay, which is a form of engraving. The mark is a physical deformation of the substrate. Same principle as a Dremel, different tool.
So Daniel's inventory spreadsheet is the direct descendant of a cuneiform tablet. He's doing what the Sumerians did.
He's doing exactly what the Sumerians did. The technology has changed. He's using a rotary tool instead of a reed stylus. He's using a spreadsheet instead of a clay tablet. But the underlying need is identical. Record what you have so you can find it later. And the durability requirement hasn't changed either. The Sumerians wanted their records to outlast them. Daniel wants his identifiers to survive the next move. Same impulse, same solution.
And the Rosetta Stone is the ultimate example of engraving as literature.
The Rosetta Stone, 196 BCE. The same text in three scripts, hieroglyphic, Demotic, and Greek, carved in granodiorite. And the reason we can read it 2200 years later is precisely because it was carved. A papyrus would have rotted. A painted inscription would have faded. The carved stone survived, and it survived well enough that Champollion could use it to crack hieroglyphics. The entire field of Egyptology rests on a piece of engraving.
It's the canonical example of why you engrave something. You want it to be read by people who aren't born yet.
And that's the thing about engraving as literature. It's a statement of intent. When you carve words in stone, you're saying this is important enough to outlast me. Gravestones, monuments, dedications. The medium is the message. Stone means permanence. Paper means ephemeral. And we've internalized that distinction for thousands of years.
Which brings us to the extreme end of the spectrum. Graham Short.
Graham Short. The world's most precise hand engraver. He works at the scale of a single blood cell. About 8 micrometers. His engravings are invisible to the naked eye. You need a microscope to verify they exist. He engraved the words of the Lord's Prayer on the head of a pin. He engraved a portrait of the Queen on a speck of gold. And the precision required is staggering. His pulse has to be controlled. He works between heartbeats. He uses specialized tools and a microscope and years of practice. Its engraving is micro-precision art.
It demonstrates the range of the medium, from a half-millimeter industrial mark to a submicron artistic work. Same principle, wildly different scale.
The same failure pattern, interestingly. His engravings are so shallow that they can be destroyed by a single touch. The oil from a fingerprint would obliterate them, so the most delicate engraving in the world is also the most fragile. Permanence isn't just about depth. It's about the relationship between the mark and the environment it lives in. A deep groove in granite outdoors will outlast a shallow engraving on gold in a vault, because the environment matters more than the depth.
There's no universal answer to how durable engraving is. It depends on depth, material, environment, and contrast. Four variables.
Four variables, and they interact. Deep engraving in soft material is worse than shallow engraving in hard material. A protected mark with no contrast is useless. An outdoor mark with perfect contrast will fade. The durability of engraving is a system property, not a material property.
Daniel's instinct is right. Engraving is the most elegant form of permanent marking. But it's not permanent. It's just the slowest failure pattern we have.
The people who need the slowest failure pattern have codified it into standards. NASA, the military, aerospace. They've done the testing. They know the depths, the materials, the pigments, the fonts, and the rest of us benefit from that knowledge for free. Daniel can look up PRC903D and apply the same principles to his kitchen appliances.
The spec for a spacecraft part number is also the spec for a toaster. The physics doesn't care what the object is.
The physics doesn't care. A groove is a groove. The question is always the same. How deep do you need to cut to make the mark outlast the object's useful life? And for most household objects, the answer isn't very deep. A few tenths of a millimeter will do fine. The object will break before the mark fades.
Unless the object lives outdoors, then you need to think like the military.
Then you need to think about UV, temperature cycling, rain, dust, and the fact that the sun in Jerusalem is brutal. Daniel's sticker frustration is a real-world accelerated stress test. The UV there destroys adhesives and pigments at a rate that would take decades in a milder climate, so his instinct to engrave is correct, and his question about limits is the right question, because even engraving has a lifespan. It's just measured in centuries instead of years.
The skill was never in the cutting. It was in the setup. I ran a pantograph engraving machine one summer at a trophy shop in Sheffield. Hargreaves and Sons, engravers to the gentry. The machine copied text from a brass master template onto trophy plaques, and the whole job was aligning the template. If the template was off by a millimeter, the plaque was off by 5. The pantograph amplified every error. I got fired after 3 weeks for producing a run of county swimming champion plaques where the text was visibly crooked. The cutting was easy. The machine did the cutting. The alignment was the entire job, and I was bad at it.
That's the thing about Graham Short. People think it's steady hands. It's not. It's the mechanical advantage of the tools. The jig, the guide, the template. The precision is in the setup. The hand just follows the machine.
My grandfather had a set of steel letter punches. He used them to mark his tools with his initials. HF, he'd hold the punch against the steel and hit it with a hammer, one letter at a time. The punches were the template. The hammer was the cutting force. And those marks are still there. I have a hammer from that set. The letters are stamped into the head. HF, clear as the day he did it. That was 70 years ago. The steel hasn't worn. The letters haven't faded. Because there's nothing to fade. It's just a dent in the metal.
The dent is below the surface. Same principle as the petroglyphs.
He used the same punches on the family silverware. And one of the pieces, a christening mug, got the initials wrong. He was dyslexic, my grandfather. He transposed the letters. The mug reads FH instead of HF, and the family kept it. 3 generations now. It's a joke. The mug with the wrong initials. They tried to fix it by over-engraving. That just made it worse. The FH is deeper than everything else. You can't erase a mistake that's carved into metal. You can only carve it deeper.
That's the double edge of permanence. A correct mark lasts forever. An incorrect mark lasts forever, too. The medium doesn't care whether you got it right.
The trophy shop had a bin of misaligned plaques. County swimming champion with the text running downhill. We couldn't sell them. We couldn't fix them. They were engraved. The mistake was permanent. The only option was to melt them down and start over. And that's the thing about engraving. It's the only marking method where the correction is destruction.
That's why the setup matters more than the cutting. You get one chance to be right. The material will remember whatever you do to it.
The pantograph taught me that. A millimeter at the template is 5 millimeters at the plaque. You learn to measure twice. Or you end up with a bin of crooked trophies and a conversation with the owner about the cost of brass.
Yet your grandfather's mistake is the one the family kept. The wrong initials are the piece that survived. The correct marks are just tools. The error is the heirloom.
The error is the heirloom, because it's the one with the story. The mug that proves Granddad was human. The tools just prove he owned them. The mug proves he was there, and he got it wrong. And we loved him anyway. That's worth more than a correct initial.
It's a perfect example of the permanence trade-off. You can't erase a mistake that's physically carved into metal. The medium is unforgiving. But that's also why it's valuable. The mistake is proof that the mark is real. A sticker can be reprinted. An engraving can't. The permanence is the point.
That christening mug is going to stick with me. Let's zoom out for a second. If even engraving has natural limits, erosion, corrosion, the slow grind of geological time, is there any marking method that's truly permanent? Or is permanence always relative to the timescale you care about?
I think permanence is always relative. The Blombos engraving survived 75,000 years because they were in a cave. The Rosetta Stone survived 2,200 years because it was granite. The hammer survived 70 years because it's steel. Every mark has a lifespan. The question is whether the lifespan is longer than the thing you're marking. And for most purposes, engraving wins that contest. The mark outlasts the object's useful life. That's the practical definition of permanent.
As we move toward more digital identification systems, the question of physical permanence becomes more acute. What happens when the QR code fades but the data it points to is still needed? Daniel's instinct to engrave might be the right one, But the medium is only half the equation. The mark has to point to something, and the thing it points to has to survive too. A perfectly engraved QR code is useless if the database it links to is gone.
That's the gap in the digital strategy. The physical mark is only as permanent as the system behind it. Engraving solves the physical problem. It doesn't solve the data problem. The Rosetta Stone survives because the text is on the stone. There's no database to lose. The identifier is the information. That's the ultimate permanent marking. Make the mark itself the message.
That's what the ancients did. They didn't engrave a reference number that pointed to a clay tablet somewhere. They engraved the whole text. The medium and the message were the same thing. No external dependency.
Which is why we can still read it. If the Rosetta Stone had been a QR code pointing to a database in Alexandria, we'd have nothing. The database would have burned. The stone survived because it didn't need anything else.
The lesson for Daniel's inventory system is maybe this. Engrave the identifier. But also engrave what the identifier means. Don't just put a number on the box. Put the name of the thing on the box. Then the mark is self-contained. It doesn't need a spreadsheet to be useful.
That's the deepest version of permanence, a mark that means something on its own. No external reference, no database, just the mark and the object and the meaning carved into the surface. That's what the Rosetta Stone is. That's what the christening mug is. The initials are wrong, but the meaning is there. The story is in the metal.
2200 years from now, someone will find something of ours. What will it be? And will they be able to read it? If it's a QR code, probably not. If it's an engraved name, probably yes. The medium matters. The message matters more.
That's the thing Daniel is reaching for with his Dremel. He's not just labeling his possessions. He's making marks that will outlast him. He's participating in a 75,000-year-old human practice. The tool has changed. The impulse hasn't. We want our marks to survive us. We want to leave a groove in the world that says we were here.
If you take one thing from this, it's that engraving wins, because it has no failure pattern of its own. It fails at the speed of the object it's cut into. Everything else fails faster than the object. The stick appeals, the ink fades, the QR code becomes illegible. The engraving is just there, a hole in the shape of a name, waiting for the object to erode around it.
The erosion takes long enough that the mark becomes a message to people who aren't born yet. That's the whole point. You're not marking the object, you're marking time.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running.
This has been My Weird Prompts, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.